Welcome to Free Fire Saturday. The phone lines are open at 221-1402. And now, Free Fire Saturday is about to commence on News Talk 1400 KQMS.
Welcome to Free Fire Saturday here on News Talk 1400 KQMS. Phone lines here are 221-1402. This is Carl Bott, and welcome to our next to the last show on Free Fire Saturday. First, I want to introduce the crew. Our producer, Heather. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, Carl.
Hey, guys, you don't know what a cute producer I have here and what a nice lady she is, too.
Oh, thanks.
Well, you are. You are. Hey, it's a little dark outside, but we're okay, right?
Yep, just crawled out of bed.
We've watched her grow from a teenager to a beautiful young lady.
Aww. She's got a lot of time here in the station, a lot more than I do. But then, of course, I'd like to introduce my soulmate here, Linda Bott.
Good morning. You know what I read the other day in the paper? Can I just
go for it?
Throw it out there.
Go for it.
1,000 people waited in line with applications. Some of them had MBAs. Some of them were very accomplished in other ways, to flip burgers at In-N-Out.
And where was this at?
Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas. Over 1,000 people waiting in line with all types of education to get a job at In-N-Out. That's how tough it's gotten. Imagine that. Well.
Now on a brighter note.
On a brighter note, because, you know, we've also got our own problems right here in Shasta County here with unemployment at a 16-year high. So what do you have on a brighter
note?
Well,
I just wanted to say on a brighter note, troops send their holiday greetings. Greetings from those serving in the armed forces can be viewed at the Record Searchlight's website at holidaygreetings.reading.com. Thought this was really neat. Both of us thought this was special. The videos of soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines were compiled by the Army and Air Force Hometown News Service as part of its Holiday Greetings program. And there you go. That's my part.
Well, you know, that's really great that the Record Searchlight does that. I hope there's no money associated with this, because I know that if you want to get your soldiers or sailors or Marines picture in, I think during Veterans Day that it costs money to put it in the paper. I mean, I realize it costs money for the paper to run and all that, but hey, they could do like we do here, and you have those toilet paper dispensers that you have to fight the toilet paper dispenser if you want one sheet.
We have a really special guest calling in today, don't we?
It is. Our new assemblyman, Jim Nielsen, will be calling in a few minutes here because we want to talk about the budget because, you know, what's going on with this budget and our people in Sacramento? I mean, they come up with a budget that they say, oh, these are not tax raises. These are just fees. But they're not. They're taxes. And so Schwarzenegger vetoes the bill, which he should have, because they were raising taxes, goes against the Constitution of our state. And yet they keep spending money like drunken sailors up there. And I'm sorry, Navy. That's not I didn't mean to insult you by comparing you to politicians in Sacramento. Just what the heck's going on? You know, and, you know, we have our problems here. We have our problems in at the national level. But we had a surplus before the politicians got into it. And here's our newest representative. Jim, good morning.
Good morning to you and Linda, and a Merry Christmas to you and your listening audience.
Well, Merry Christmas
Merry
to you,
Christmas,
too.
Jim.
And I was just going on a little rant right there on what's going on in Sacramento.
Well, what's going on in Sacramento is overspending and an attempt to overtax illegally. Day before yesterday, a whole series of bills foisting around $10 billion in taxes was run through the legislature on a majority vote, violating Proposition 13. Now, that's only the most recent goings-on in Sacramento,
yeah.
Carl.
Hey, Jim, we're going to have to take a quick break here, but I wanted to get you on now, and I want you to kind of expound on this when we come back.
Standing by.
All right. Hey, look, this is Carl Linda Bott here on Free Fire Saturday on News Talk 1400 KQMS. Phone lines here 221-1402 if you have a question for our new assemblyman. Join us on the other side.
The
Tobacco and Brew is one of my favorite places to shop in Reading. Joe and Shelley began Tobacco and Brewer 30 years ago and have grown to a 5,000 square foot. Carl and the Bot, and welcome back to Free Fire Saturday. Our guest here is Jim Nielsen. Jim, tell us again what's happening with the budget when the Democrats, or I should say the Democrats, that are one side's pushing through tax raises?
Well, you know, I don't want to call it necessarily a drill, but I guess sometimes you have to go through the process. I've been through a lot of budgets over the years, Carl, and some of them were on time. Actually, two were early during my years as Republican leader. One was on time, one was 3 days late, one was 15 days late. What can't happen this year is a big 88-day standoff. I mean, that just doesn't serve the institution of the people of the state of California. And to the good side, I've seen a lot more resolve among both parties in the legislature to do something. There's a sense of urgency that something needs to be done. Now, there's a very different approach. The Democratic approach is to raise taxes to get out of the deficit. I debated three nights ago that if we raise taxes to deal with the deficit, all we're doing is funding a broken budget. That in no way fixes it in the long run. And this attempt, night before last, with all these taxes, day before yesterday, rather, all of these taxes, is just a testimony. There were no reforms included in the package. The reforms that I am advocating is a spending cap, going back to the old GAN limit of my friend Paul GAN and Howard Jarvis, to limit state expenditures. That is absolutely critical, an ongoing spending cap. I advocate a two-year budget. In other words, at least only every other year do all the special interests descend on Sacramento and fight over the budget. That would also, in a way, restrain spending. And also a very significant reserve for economic uncertainties, an idea that dates clear back to my years with the Duke Mason administration working in the legislature.
Hey, Jim, has anybody bought in on any of these things?
Well, it would appear on the votes thus far, Democrats and Republicans are far apart. Republicans are lockstep. And the governor seems to talk about the spending cap, but I don't know if he'll dig in on it. I hope so. He has before. But, you know, behind the scenes, maybe there is a more positive dynamic than may appear out front. At least I hope that's the case, Carl. Obviously, I was sworn in December 1st, so I've not been down there, on the inside, shall I say, for a very long time.
Yeah, how come you haven't fixed this yet?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just kind of a slow old farmer boy, you know. It takes a little while. But you know what? It's almost like herding cats. You've not only got 120 legislators and a governor to deal with, but you've got thousands of special interests out there of all kinds and all well-intended that are fighting over this thing. And the people of California, I don't think they're interested, though, in solving this problem with tax increases, including an 18% a gallon gas tax increase.
Well, now, see, that's something I saw, that they were going to rescind the gas tax and then change it to a fee, and it was going to be, what, 18? Is it 18 cents more?
More than what you're paying right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, so isn't that just like calling a cat a dog if it's still a cat?
Well, that's what the whole drill was the other night. In all candor, they trotted out a legal opinion of legislative counsel basically it's semantics. Two things happened. They just by semantics said, nope, taxes are not taxes now, they're fees. Thank you very much. Just by words, changing the word, the interpretation of the words. And then the other thing is they decided that if it's revenue neutral and through some of the cuts that had been proposed by Democrats, and they, to their credit, have proposed some, cuts that are probably deeper than they would be comfortable with, and I give them credit for that resolve. But if they could balance cuts with tax increases, they called it revenue neutral, and therefore you didn't need a three-quarters vote. The three-quarters vote must be protected. That is the only thing. It doesn't protect just the minority party, in this case the Republican Party. It protects the people of California.
Well, I just see that. I just see is that that everybody broke for Christmas, and all the legislators broke for Christmas. And yet we still don't have a budget. We here in Shasta County are in danger of, and I'm sure you've read about this, we have all these bridges over, every bridge that we have is under construction. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about we may lose funding for that. in the beginning of the year because there's no budget and there's no money for it. I mean, what do we do then?
Well, what should be happening is the leadership should be meeting daily and trying to agree. My suggestion, for example, the very first day that we debated this last week to the Republican leader and Speaker Bass was that there are two lists of cuts proposed. One is a Republican list and one is a Democrat list. They're different in some ways. There are a number of items that are the same. I said, sit down tonight and negotiate a common list, and let's vote on what we agree on. And in my floor debate, my suggestion to the entire body was let's take incremental steps of every day voting on things we agree on, and we'll end up finding that there's not all that much we don't agree on, and then we can finally make an agreement and get something out of here. And with strong reforms, you can't just tinker with this budget as in the past been done. The budget deficit is too big and it's been tinkered with too long. There have to be those meaningful reforms of which I've just spoken, particularly the spending limit, to get us out of this in the future. The other side that was not addressed, well, it was addressed in a partial way, Carl. In fact, I voted for a couple of things that night. One was to help hospital construction move along quickly in the CEQA process because some of our hospitals need to do seismic retrofits. It's critical. I met with the California Hospital Associations in Reading about 2 weeks ago and spoke to them. Another one is to move these bond monies out quicker and expedite the spending of the bond money to get people in jobs and get these projects moving forward. Now, the overall picture, your point is well taken in terms of what the Treasurer said about the bond markets. And sure, they have to have confidence. And I do believe that there's enough members down there that realize this is urgent. It has got to be done. The budget resolution has got to be taken care of. And I have said we don't need to do anything else, no legislation, nothing else except the budget until it gets done.
That is wonderful. And if you're just tuning in, we are on the phone with Assemblyman Jim Nielsen. It's Carl and Linda Bott here, 29 degrees at 720-221-1402. We'll see you on the other side. Welcome back. You're listening to Free Fire Saturday. We are on the phone with Assemblyman Jim Nielsen. Congratulations, by the way, with your new appointment.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate the confidence of the voters of the North State. It's great to be back. Linda, I must observe something. You're closing before the break. See you on the other side. I love that, but it's kind of ominous. And something you just said as you close, it's 29 degrees. You know, that reminds me so much of an ad by Bob Dole years ago when he ran for president. It said, it's 29 degrees in Lawrence, Kansas, 6 o'clock in the morning. And that reminded me of all those mornings on the dairy, going out at 2 or 3 in the morning, sometimes at 5 o'clock if I could sleep in. It's 29 degrees, and the watering troughs are iced over, or going out onto the disc, and then you start disking in that cold, and the dirt literally cracks as you cut through it. That reminded me of those cold, cold mornings.
You know, there's something to be said about, and I've not done that. I did grow up on a ranch, and I know that we were never allowed to sleep in, of course, because we had to go out and feed the horses and do what we had to do in the dark. But dairy farmers and people who really farmed, you know the meaning of W-O-R-K.
Yes, the work ethic. I call it hard pan values.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I don't know if that's a good segue or not, but, you know, I look at the front page here. Unemployment is a 16-year high here in Reading and Shasta County. What kind of plans are there? Do you have any plans, Jim, for pushing something out here? Is there anything we can do?
Well, I call it rural renaissance, and I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
One of the deficiencies in the budget proposal, there were not enough economic incentives in it. The ones that I told you that I voted for to expedite getting these bond monies and out, that was good. But it needs to be far more broadly encompassing. The real answer to California's budget deficit is the economy, the improvement of the economy. If the economy is going fine and we don't go crazy on spending, this state will be solvent as a Dickens. But a number of things are in play right now. One is AB 32, this global warming initiative, which if drastically implemented is going to just run business right out of the state of California. It's going to cost the businesses billions of dollars, and I'm going to be very engaged in that.
Now, this is the global warming initiative, right?
Yeah, that all of these standards, the Air Resources Board is just coming down with it, and new regulations on the septic tanks, for goodness sakes, you know.
Well, that hasn't been passed yet, and I tell you, we addressed that one this week on our show. We had our Shasta County Environmental Manager in here, and we had 180 people from Shasta County, Redding, here that attended that meeting and were vehemently against this all these changes.
As well they should be, and that's an arbitrary imposition by the state saying we want a statewide standard that affects everybody, and they don't care about the cost, and that's what the Global Warming Initiative will mean. So I'm going to be working very, very vigilantly to try to see that, ensure that that is reasonably implemented.
Well, I don't know if you saw today, I just glanced at it, but it looks like President-elect Obama, his science advisors, the two gents that he put in as science advisors, are advocates of this, of global warming and fighting it.
Well, you know, if it's true, and I question that, for eons has been global warming and global cooling, but we better fight it responsibly and this not drive people out of business.
Well, that's the fear right there.
Specifically to the rural and suburbanizing counties, and suburbanizing would be like Redding. It's in transition, being more suburban than rural. The rest of Shasta County, of course, is still rural, and the other counties that I'll represent, maybe Sutter's getting a little suburban around Yuba City, but they have unique needs. In rural renaissance in the 1980s, I authored a bill, a combination of grants and loans to rural counties to allow them to diversify and enhance their economic base in ways that didn't hurt agriculture and timber. I'm going to revisit that in a vastly broader way this time, and one of the cores of the new rural renaissance, or the heart of it, will be forest and wildland management. Managing those forest resources for the health of the forest, for the global warming from the carbon standpoint, there's a huge plus. I've had a lot of meetings with professionals and scientists on that point, and removing that biomass and utilizing it for economic purposes, in other words, for jobs. And that's forest and wildlands. That also is of value in terms of managing the fires. This last year was what I call the year of the red sunset, all these darn fires. We need to cut down that fuel out there. So it will also be about getting projects going, not putting all of our bond monies into studies and languishing around for years and cumbersome environmental processes that stop getting the jobs done that the voters have voted for. One-stop permitting for the local communities, and a new interesting kind of one. I was meeting with the former president of eBay, Meg Whitman, a while back, and I was talking to her about this in rural areas. She said, Jim, you should try to expand ubiquitous broadband. I love that word. That's a broadband that goes everywhere. Well, the point to that is making more internet capability, broadband capability to the rural areas so small businesses can market their products to a broader market all over the world even. And in part, that would be something that I started in the 80s, business incubators, where we provide resources and counseling and how to set up to the small business, how to set up to, and access this internet, and all kinds of other ideas that your economic development folks, that your local chambers of commerce, your business people will bring to me. I'd ask your listeners to feed me ideas of what the new rural renaissance can be to revitalize the economy of these counties.
Hey, Jim, we're up to against a hard break here, so hang on. This is Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Saturday. Join us on the other side. This is Carl and Linda Bott. Welcome back to Free Fire Saturday here on News Talk 1400 KQMS. And, you know, we've had the phones ringing, and it seems like our system has managed to cut off listeners or not. And we've been unable to answer a couple of calls. So call back. We've got it fixed now.
221-1402.
Right. Our guest is Assemblyman Jim Nielsen, and Jim is talking about a lot of things that impact on us out here, including the rural renaissance, a way of getting more jobs into the area, and also everything that's been going on with the budget. So, Jim, what's next?
Well, what's next is a whole lot of hard, doggone work, Carl. As I say, the first priority has got to get the budget together, but the budget and economic well-being of the state go hand in hand. Now, there's a macroeconomic issue, what's going on in the nation and the world, but I'm confident that this economy is going to come back. Its underlying foundation is very sound, and the enterprise of our citizens is sound. What we can't do is raise taxes and encourage businesses to invest. And we've got to stimulate the economy by stimulating business people to take those risks, the entrepreneurs, the small business people. And yes, we have to hunker down for just a bit of while, but I'm confident and I'm bullish that we can move ahead. I'd like to be giving you a whole litany of legislative priorities that I have in education and but it's time to focus on the budget. But I will focus on one aspect of it, though, Carl and Linda, and that's career tech education. That is something I am a champion of, and there are fine community colleges that are the great bastions of career tech ed. Everybody does not need to go to college, and they're fine, very high-paying jobs, and the technically trained, that's the ones who are really most desperately needed in the job market, if you ask your business people, small, medium, and large businesses.
Yeah.
And we can train them. Your Shasta College doing a great job in the nursing education, and in our hospitals up there, in Reading, I've been informed, are not suffering for nurses like many are because we've got a good program at the college.
Oh, Jim, I tell you what, we've got the phone lines backed up now since we got them fixed. So, Carol, good morning.
Good morning. I give you a little background. I started working in the field in Oregon when I was 8 years old, which didn't hurt me. So I grew up knowing how to work. And anyway, through my lifetime, I bought a couple of pieces of property, which don't amount to much, but one of them is a rental. I'm retired. I make a little bit less than $1,000 a month. This is rural property. If they come around and inspect the septic tanks and the water, they're going to find one reason or another to say, well, you got to move your well further away, or you got to do this or do that. And you know what it's going to do to a whole lot of people? We're going to be homeless. Because there's no money to do these fancy things California wants. But California needs money. That's what this is all about. Plus, the environmentalists, they've been trying to kill off the economy of this nation for years. And if one big thing you can do to save money is stop the hospitals from having to treat everybody that aren't citizens. And the schools, that bothers me. But, when it comes to survival, we've got to get into survival mode, and our government won't let us get in survival mode.
That's some really good points, Carol. Right. Jim, what do you got?
Well, she's got some great points, and I guess what sort of coalesced in all of that is you hear how we've got government worrying about your doggone septic tanks. I mean, that's the biggest thing that government can worry about in some state of California right now. I think it is very disappointing indeed. I agree with her premises all the way.
Am I still on? I have a well up there. I'll bet my water is purer than this water.
Well, the thing about it, Carol, from what I understand, listen to Marcy and a bunch of other people here, is that our water we get for drinking comes from hundreds of feet down, and it's not affected at all by septic tanks. And what they're trying to do is a cookie-cutter approach. What's good for Southern California is good for Northern California.
And the thing is, this one piece of property is in Lassen, and the other is in Modoc.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of people in Modoc. There's going to be a whole hell of a lot, pardon my French, of homeless people, and I'll be one of them because I don't have a bank account. I mean, the Social Security and the rent, because I own that property, feeds me, keeps the roof over my head. But if I have to comply to their new rules, and they're not going to be favorable for anybody, they're going to have to put a condemned sign on the front door. And so therefore, I'm out of $350 I get for the little rent I get. And
Jim, this is, you're hearing from your constituents here.
I love it, and that's really, and what she's saying is very heartfelt. That's her whole darn life. And the real point here, people who promulgate these rules and regulations and sometimes these legislative ideas have no thought to what that means to some little citizen out there. I'll probably do it again. I used to sit in the Senate and committee, and they'd say, are you ready to vote, Senator? And I said, well, no, not really. I need to go out and see what the folks in Igo and Ono think about this.
Well, that Air Quality and Water Quality Board, are they appointed or voted in?
No, they're appointed.
They're throwback hippies is what they are.
Hey. Well, I don't know if I want to call them.
Well, I do.
But
they used to hang out in San Francisco, and now they're running the state.
Hey, Carol, thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you.
Phil, good morning.
Good morning.
Do you have a question?
Go ahead.
Go on, Phil.
Okay, what I want to talk about is, we're running out of money. They're going to raise our taxes and all this. Why don't they cancel all these fancy parties they're having, like the museum in Sacramento when they had the awards for the Hall of Fame people and like that? Why don't they cut that stuff out?
Well,
that's just extra.
I didn't attend that. I didn't even know about yet that particular party, but there are plenty of things that can be cut out. There is absolutely no question about it in government. There's plenty of fact. I've, for 17 years, have led the Board of Prison Terms of California, and I spent most of those years fighting the biggest bureaucracy in Sacramento, the $10 billion Corrections and Rehabilitations Agency, and I can attest that there's a whole lot of money in there that doesn't need to be.
Well, you know, Jim, you know, Carol brought something out, and Phil did too, and she said, I think she had the right word, survival mode. Why don't we go into survival mode and cut everything out, and what's being done to seal the borders so that we aren't spending billions on people that aren't even supposed to be here?
Well, that's, Prop 187 was supposed to have taken a big step in that direction, and yet again, the people's will has been thwarted in that regard. I've been very engaged in that debate as a farmer over my whole lifetime, and even of late, inputting the federal legislation. In fact, I got a provision in the federal immigration reform of 1996 that said if you're a formerly deported felon and you reenter the United States, you're going to do some really big time. We're going to put you away for 25 years. Now, you put a few dudes back in prison for 25 years, those big drug dealers are going to think twice of not coming across the border into the United States. And indeed, we are serving a whole lot of people that we do not need to.
Phil, you got anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay, Phil, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Doug, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Hey, we're doing fine, Doug. How are you?
I was doing fine until I heard about this digital TV bit. I got a question for you. We're up here in the snow country, right?
That's right.
Right?
And is this for Jim or me, or both of us?
Well, basically me too. This happened the other day when we had a big old snowstorm and everybody's car went out. All right?
Yeah.
No problem. Turn on, take out your little battery power. Remember those battery powered TVs that ran on D cells? We take camping.
Yeah, absolutely.
Turn it on, and guess what? We have no signal because we need a digital converter box and an antenna.
Ooh.
Guess what? Yeah. Now guess what those converter box plugs into?
Electricity.
110 volt AC from PG&E, and we have no power.
So if you have no power, then you have no way of getting news on what's going on.
Exactly.
And this is radio.
They switch everything to digital. All these little battery-powered sets that we have, and they don't make a little battery camp TV running digital, still analog. If there's an emergency or a disaster or the Reading area has all the power outage, what do we know? What are we going to do? We can't hear anything except, of course, our radios.
Well, you know, and radio is a primary way of getting information, but you're absolutely right. Jim, this isn't a state thing. This is a national thing.
No, this thing here is nationwide. But
yeah,
wouldn't it be feasible to keep at least one of those transmitters going, let's say on the Channel 3, Channel 4? That's the one that everybody else runs around where all your little Nintendos and PlayStations, everything else connects to, and keep it as a backup?
It makes a lot of sense, but I must confess, you're way over my head in this technological stuff.
Well, they're just forcing us to buy new TVs to keep the economy open so they can get extra tax money.
You know, but Doug, what you just brought up is really a good point, is why, you know, to keep one analog up, so instead of digital, so that in case there is a, as a backup way of getting information instead of putting all your eggs in one basket, is kind of interesting.
That's a great thing. A bill should be passed about that. And I'll share with you that when I first moved here, I went to, I'll say Clyde's, and had all of my electronics. I bought all my electronics. And I remember I bought a TV specifically that I knew could convert to 2009 because, of course, we're all attracted to the flat screen. But the flat screen is going to basically...
At that point,
which is, what, 4 years ago? Mm-hmm. In 2009, if you don't have... There's a certain name for how it can transfer over. It's done. You're done with it.
Yes.
It's obsolete.
The minute you have a major snowstorm like we had, a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Or a major rainstorm when all of our power lines blow down, how are you supposed to operate your big flat-screen TV, your digital converter box, your satellite and cable if you don't have something to plug it into?
Yep.
Well, it's, you know...
generator inside your house and power it up?
But it goes even further than that. Okay, this, you know, if you have a massive earthquake and you lose power, period... And so what do you have? So you go to your battery-operated radios or TVs. And so your radios hopefully would still be working because it comes, you know, I mean, that's covered. But you're right, you know, the TV sets would be gone unless there was some kind of backup. That, you know, that's a really good point. We ought to maybe pursue this a little bit further. Thanks so much, Doug.
California should have one emergency transmitter. You know, something that maybe is a local area that they could drive all around the state and prop it up so if somebody has a problem, they can switch to three or four. All of a sudden, they hear what's going on. They can see where they need to go to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Otherwise, you just get static.
That's a great idea. Hey, you know what? Our listeners are the smartest in the world.
Amen. You've raised a great point.
Everybody considers me dumb, stupid, and I got to get with a program type fit.
No, not at all. You know, it's because you think out of the box, partner.
Well, the other last thing is on this digital TV, it turns out that where I live, we get intermittent digital signals, so I get little cubes and squares all over the TV.
Oh, gosh.
Unless, of course, I have to spend more money that I don't have to buy cable or satellite and all that expense. And unfortunately, I can't afford it.
No.
Turn off the TV, turn off the cell phone, turn off the cable.
But the thing about it, Doug, is if you turn off TV, you'll probably get smarter.
Oh, pretty smart as it is. Everybody calls me a smart A, but that's okay.
No, it's just the fact he's not watching, draining our brains with TV. Hey, Doug, thanks a lot. We got a hard break here.
Sure thing.
Bye. Okay. Okay, hey, look, this is Carl Linda Bott here on Free Fire Saturday, our next to last Free Fire Saturday here on News Talk 1400 KQMS.
And why is that?
Well, we're doing Monday through Friday now on Free Fire Radio on KQMS from 8 to 9, and 6 days a week we could do that. And then I thought, you know, we could go to Seventh Day and have religious services, but that was probably going too far. Join us on the other side. Hey, this is Carl Lindebott. Welcome back to Free Fire Saturday News Talk 1400 KQMS. Bruce, good morning.
Well, good morning there. We just had another question for Jim.
Okay.
And yeah, Bruce. It goes back to the same old thing. I keep beating the war drums on that, but where do you get the real numbers back on this cost for illegal undocumented immigration when it's supposedly with $9 to $11 billion annually to take care of these guys, and 33% of them in the Los Angeles County Jail are undocumented illegals? I mean, where does these – I just want to know where the numbers come from, and are they even addressed down there in Sacramento, or is it something that nobody really knows?
Well, yes, absolutely they're addressed. Again, from my years of heading the Board of Prison Terms, some 17% of the entire prison population are illegal. And it is very difficult to deal with that, you bet. The most, of course, immigration issue itself is a federal issue far more than a state issue. It's an impact of enormous magnitude on the state, and the state doesn't get recompensed from the federal government for the cost, for example, of incarcerating illegal immigrants who are in state prison in California. So
why can't you turn into and put in a system in effect like Apero has in Arizona, to where they really, really, really do not want to be in his prison because it doesn't cost him $3,500 a month to keep somebody there?
Because of the federal courts, sir, the federal courts, it's a huge problem. You've just been aware of federal judges saying that they can back a dump truck up to the state treasury and take as much as $8 billion out of the general fund to do
what
they
Arizona think. Arizona underneath federal federal rule too?
Different jurisdiction. That's why Sheriff Apayo is able to do what he does with his boot camps and tent camps and all. I'm very familiar with these issues, and it's very frustrating. Let me tell you this: the federal courts are costing California taxpayers billions of dollars.
Well, it just seems like if you've gotten on the shelf there for health care and the prison and the educational system, and you have a number like $11 billion, it's a real number. It ought to be really addressed.
You know, Bruce, you're absolutely right. You know, and you know, the thing that's always gotten to me was why do prisoners live better than our troops do in the field?
Well, that's a good telling point, Carl. And again, you get back to the federal court's interpretation of what should be. I've dealt with them extensively. I've had a lot of lawsuits against me in my official capacity as chairman of the Board of Prison Terms on these matters. Now, you know, prisons aren't country clubs, let me assure you of that. Having been to almost all of them in the state of California, I can attest. And doing many, many proceedings and dealing with the wardens and inmates. They're not country clubs, of course, but federal courts are costing us an awful lot of money, and illegal immigration is too. I will always remain fully a part of the immigration debate and reforms. And I thought Prop 187 was a very positive attempt many years ago, and the voters took a strong stand about these costs.
Hey, Bruce, thanks for your phone call. We've got to move on. Our phone lines are loaded here. Thank you very much. Daniel, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, what's up, Daniel? Hey, by the way, Daniel, your duck's up here right here in our in the studio.
Oh, that just makes me proud.
Well, thanks a lot.
We put it up every day.
Jim, I just have a real simple question, and it's probably not simple, but the legislature, even our federal House of Representatives, do not do their job when it comes to the judges who take over the job of the legislature. And you know, when we were supposed to have a separation of powers here, so I don't understand why impeachment proceedings don't happen against these judges who choose to make laws instead of interpret laws.
Well, you do have an occasion to vote on judges, even California State Supreme Court justices. And if you remember, many years ago, a number of Supreme Court justices were defeated in the state of California. That sent a resounding message. And the voters do have occasion to vote for Superior Court judges. You've had an occasion up in Shasta County to have a very fine contest of some very qualified people. So you do get to have some checks and balances. But it does disturb me. The California State Supreme Court has started a whole new trend of contemporizing, and Prop 8 is a product of it, the marriage between man and women, and a man and a woman, if you remember.
I do.
Just had a one-vote decision that turned the whole thing upside down again, and then we've now fortunately passed Proposition 8.
Which the Attorney General is fighting right now.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's right.
But see, The question I'm asking, though, is the legislature has a responsibility to take impeachment proceedings and, you know, start something like that when these judges are doing what they're doing. You know, we shouldn't have to wait for a vote to come when this happens.
Well, in impeaching a judge is a big, you know, and I'm not familiar with initiating the impeachment in the legislature. I'll have to check into that. I haven't been around in a long time. I probably should be, and I certainly was the leader of the recall of Rose Byrd. And,
yeah, but isn't that a recall that we can get, like you get signatures and things like that, right?
That you can, yes, sir.
Okay, hey, look, we're getting short on time here, and we've got the phone lines lit up, and I know we've got to get to a couple more people. Daniel, thank you so much for your phone call.
Take care, folks.
Thank you. Thanks. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Daniel. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Colonel. How are you, sir?
Gunny, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm outstanding. We just got back from a visit to Parris Island, to the genesis of it all, and we went up to Lejeune and went to the Outer Banks. What I called about, in a little aside before we get started, on what the senator was just talking about, the nursing program, I think you are aware that our local Purple Heart chapter gives a $1,000 scholarship every year to the nursing program and the dental hygiene program out at Shasta College. So that's just a little aside
Absolutely.
That I'm reminding me of.
And you know, also too, talking about that, is that Shasta College is, and it just goes right along with what Jim is saying, is they're teaching green jobs. They've got things going for teaching green job technology, like working on the wind turbines and putting in solar panels out there right now.
That's fantastic. Basically, what I wanted to talk to you about, Colonel, if I might, is the Toys for Tots program. I don't have this gentleman's permission to use his name, but I was out at the holiday market on Placer collecting toys, and this gentleman walked up to me and asked me who I was and who I represented, you know, the Marine Corps League, and about the Toys for Tots program, and he asked me if we accepted cash donations. So I said yes. He said, well, if you'll give me an address, I'll mail you a check. So the only information I had with me was my Purple Heart box number, my Purple Heart card with a box number on it. But I said, if you send a check in, make it out to Toys for Tots program. I went to our mailbox downtown, and the gentleman sent us a check for $500.
For wow. Toys for Tots, yeah.
Isn't that this time of economic hardship, that's just a godsend.
Well, you know, you've got the Marine Corps League is doing Toys for Tots. These are for toys for kids in our own area here. Is that right?
Yes, sir. And, well, I've got one more thing about that as well. But I just want to, like I said, I did not get this gentleman's permission. I hope I'm not violating the confidence.
Okay, but, hey, Gunny, we're running out of time.
His name is David H. Burton.
Okay.
And he is a gentleman, and I wanted to let your listeners and you know that there are just some outstanding people in our community.
Oh, we know that, Gunny. And people like you that are collecting toys, and we can't do anything but thank you again for everything you've done.
Well, now, one other little thing. I got another generosity that I want to publicly acknowledge, too. When Supervisor Hartman gave our chapter the award,
right.
This gentleman called me, and he asked about the Purple Heart and what we did. And I told him about our Thanksgiving baskets and our Christmas parties for the children of the troops that are deployed.
Uh-huh.
His name is Richard McKinnon, and he owns a technical management staffing association called TMSA. Colonel, he gave me a check for $1,000.
Well, you know what? The people in Reading are just outstanding people.
We were able to budget $50 per child.
Oh, that's great.
With that.
And
these are our neighbors. These are people that are serving. They're going in harm's way in our behalf in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we'll be able to do something nice for their children because they take a tremendous pay cut when they.
I tell you, hey, Gunny, can you call me back on Monday? We have our show running from 8 to 9. So we can go over this a little bit more because I've just completely run out of time here.
I understand that. I enjoy listening to the sentence. But, yeah, I'll be glad to, Colonel.
Okay, thanks. So call me back Monday about 8:10.
Semper Fidelis, my
Semper
friend.
Semper Fidelis. Thank you.
You bet.
Jim.
Jim.
It's been great hearing from you and sharing your expertise with us today.
Hey, what a last fine call, though. The generosity of the great, wonderful folks of the North State. That's a great way to end the day.
It is. And, Jim, thank you so much. And we're going to have you on a bunch more times here in the future.
I look forward to it, folks. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Okay. Last thing is that we went to, and we talked about Salvation Army needing 150 turkeys. Shasta Regional Medical Center came through and gave 150 turkeys for people that needed them this Christmas.
Shasta Regional Center. That's right.
Hey, look,
gotta go.
This is Carlin DeBott, Free Fire Saturday. It's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?